Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome back to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. Before we get into tonight's episode, I just wanted to give you guys a heads up that we did run into some technical difficulties while recording this episode. When we record episodes for the podcast, we use Skype, and unfortunately, once in a while, Skype acts up. And on this occasion, for this episode, it did act up several times, and I've done my best to edit it as best I can, so I apologize if some conversations get cut off, if it might seem a little jarring at times. That is probably when Skype was acting up. So I apologize for that. I did the best I could. So I'm hoping you will enjoy this episode. This is a reunion of sorts between myself and my guests this evening of the old Geek Fallout podcast. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Thank you very much for listening. Hello, fellow podcast listeners, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host this evening. My name is Chris Lockhart. I have two special guests with me this evening. And I should point out, the three of us used to podcast together on the Geek Fallout podcast back in the day. First up is Mr. Jeff Brown. How's it going, Jeff?
Good. Thanks for having me back on after all these years. Five, six years, I think, since we last did this.
Yeah, it's been at least 5 years, and since the three of us have been together for an episode, I don't even know how long that was. Yeah, it might have been...
Probably going back seven.
Yeah, or even more, actually.
we're here now, and last but not least, joining us this evening is Mr. Richard Reeder. How's it going, Rich?
Good. Happy to be here for the reunion.
Awesome. And hopefully we don't run into any more technical difficulties because, this is take two of this recording. First up, our main topic this evening is we're going to talk about Warhammer. And Jeff is here this evening, and he is what I would consider an expert on Warhammer, so he's going to give us a little tutorial, sorry, that's a hard word to say, on Warhammer. So Jeff, walk us through Warhammer. How long have you been doing Warhammer?
Wow.
How many times have you seen the movie?
What movie?
Isn't that a Warhammer movie?
No, you're thinking Warcraft, my friend.
Yeah,
Warcraft. Oh, yeah. See, this is why we need you here, because I would have been like, it's all the same.
So I got back into Warhammer. So Warhammer almost splits into two different genres. You have the science fiction one called Warhammer 40,000, which takes place in the 41st millennium.
Okay.
And then Warhammer Fantasy, which has now been revamped as Age of Sigmar, and that's more of your fantasy style. So I actually got back into Warhammer Fantasy all the way back when I was a young lad of probably grade 6, grade 7. I started playing with a friend of mine, and you know, played there, and just, you know, had some fun between the two of us. And Warhammer itself is produced by a company called Games Workshop, so I'll back up a little bit here. It's not just a game. It's an entire hobby, they like to call it. So not only do you have the tabletop miniature game, you also have they have their own publishing division, and that is a whole, they have count. I'm looking at a bookshelf here that is actually just filled with Games Workshop books, like novel books. Mm-hmm. So they have a whole, there's a whole wealth of backstory and lore to the game. I mean, Warhammer 40,000 just celebrated its 27th year of being around, and Warhammer Fantasy series is going on over 30, and each of those have different races and years of lore and fluff, as we like to call it. And then there's the actual hobby aspect, which is building and converting and painting the actual miniatures. So myself, I got into it, like I said, when I was younger, and it kind of dropped off as I hit high school and onto university. But I always kept up with the lore. Like they had at that point a monthly magazine. They still do, okay. White Dwarf, that they produce, and that was always, they had, you know, stories, rules, pictures, reports on different stuff that was going on in kind of the hobby. And sometime about, I'd say, 10 years ago, I kind of, you know, I was still into it. A good friend, Mark Aldama, was on a couple podcasts. Chris, you said you were talking about him earlier.
Yeah.
And I, when I first met him, oddly enough, he was into it as well, but just in the lore aspect. We got talking again. I kind of said, maybe I want to get back into the actual game. And I picked up a couple of units, kind of just posted online on one of the message forums looking for someone that should get me an intro game. And that led to now where I have pretty much an entire room that is covered in Warhammer paraphernalia. I'm sitting at a desk right now that has a painting station with several miniatures and probably close to over 100 different colors of paint and little tiny pots, a bookshelf covered in books, and a whole closet full of miniatures, as well as another bookshelf full of miniatures. And that's kind of where I am. But what Warhammer itself is, like I said, it's a tabletop miniature game. I'll specifically be speaking about the Warhammer 40,000, that's kind of where, that's my preferred game, but there is, okay. Like I said, Age of Sigmar, which is a fantasy side of things. Other smaller genres of games, Warhammer Underworlds, which is a miniature deck building type game with miniatures involved, as well as several other, they call them specialist games. But primarily Warhammer 40,000, it's their biggest one.
Okay.
And it's a tabletop miniatures game. So you as a player choose a faction. There are several factions. There's several human factions, or there's a several transhuman, basically like superhumans. There are several evil style factions. There's the evil humans. There's the evil transhumans. There's, you know, imagine the bugs from Starship Troopers, those pyramids.
Okay.
You have the Necrons, which are endless sentient robots. You have Adeptus Mechanicus, which is like a good guy faction that they're all kind of like machine, cyborg, robot people. You have Eldar and the various forms, which are like space elves. You have space orcs, and it goes on. There's all told, there's probably about 14, and if you were to really break it down, maybe up to 20 different factions and even more sub-factions. And each play in a different way. So how this game actually plays is typically it's played on a 6-foot by 4-foot table. You construct your army using the rules. Each unit in the game is assigned via the rules. So you have your main rule book, and then you have your own army faction book. Okay. In your army faction book, each unit is worth a certain amount of points. And those points are supposed to represent how effective that unit is on the tabletop. How durable they are, how strong they are, how good they are at shooting, how good they are at combat, etc. And you construct your army, and typically the point value is 2,000 points. And you construct your army based within that point value, and then you go and you play against another person. It's not simply a, you know, go until one person doesn't have any models left, but that does happen. Most games you'll play, and again, these range incredibly. They use a certain mission. You have the actual several styles of playing as well. You have a narrative style of play, which, like I mentioned, there's a whole fluff base around this, and a lot of people are into that narrative or fluffy style of play where you really don't pay attention to the points. It's more like a historical game where you'll build your force around a historical battle, and you will recreate that on the tabletop. You have non-competitive, you know, kind of what we call fluffy play, where people will still build to like a 2,000 point army, but they're taking units that they think they get painted or that they think they're fun to use, rather than them being, you know, an optimal competitive choice. And then you have the style that I prefer, which is competitive, which is, you know, again, there's usually a set mission pack. There are several mission packs you can buy out. There's the ITC, which is the International Tournament Circuit. It's probably one of the largest in North America. They have a pack of their own rules and six different missions that you can pick from. And typically when you go to a tournament, you'll be playing these missions in North America, and they have an international ranking system, which once you go to a tournament, you actually build points and you can get ranked, and you can go and you can check your rankings out of, I think right now it's almost, it's over 10,000 players are ranked in the world competitively. Over in Europe, you have the ETC style, which is the European Team Championships.
Okay.
Again, same game, just different mission pack, different way, slight change to certain rules, how they interpret certain rules, because these rules are so big. There's so much the game that you can actually read rules in certain ways, and because of the English language the way it is, you can actually have different interpretations of a rule that might be right. So Games Workshop does produce a FAQ for people to ask questions, as well as a errata that they come out with twice a year that tries to clarify these. But as new rules are coming out or they redo certain armies, obviously new questions arise. So it's up to the players to try to best interpret this, which leads to some interesting discussions online, if you can imagine.
Yeah.
So now once you've created your army, you've set up your terrain. So you're not just playing on a flat table. You actually do play on a table that has ruins or bunkers or buildings or hills or crates, and you try to make it a little thematic as possible. Mm-hmm. You then, based on the mission, there are certain objectives. Usually in ITC, you have to hold. So you'll have objective markers on the table that are either placed via the mission or placed by either player. And you have to hold an objective every turn. You have to destroy an opposing enemy unit every turn. I mean, that those get you 1 point each. Then at the end of the whole, your go, I go. So it's not a, we both go at the same time. It's I have my turn where I move all my units. I do all my psychic, my magic powers. Then I shoot with all my units. Then I charge and do close combat with all my units. And then it's your turn where you move all your units and you follow that sequence.
So very much a real-time strategy.
Real-time strategy is you're actually, both players are interacting at the same time.
Role-play, wait, no.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Yes.
Like Civilization.
Yep. Well, even Civilization, you're going at the same time. This one is I do my turn almost independent of you. Sometimes I do actions like making an attack against you that you will need to roll a save or whatnot. But very much typically, it is my turn is my turn, and what I do on it is, yes, like the old school Final Fantasy. I make my attack. Yeah. And then you go, then I go. So the you go, I go, that's one round. Typically, rounds can go anywhere between 5 and 7 rounds in a game, which can take, you know, sometimes you can have a superpower army, and you clear through your opponent, and I've tabled opponents, which means I've removed all of their models in 2 turns. Hmm. And I've had other games that have lasted 4 hours and gone 7 rounds, 7 turns.
Wow.
So it is a dice-based system. So each unit is represented on the table by several characteristics. You have a move characteristic, which is in how many inches you can go. You have a ballistic skill and a weapon skill. Those are typically how good you shoot and how good you fight in close combat. You have a strength and toughness values, which are compared against each other. So my strength versus your toughness to give me a value on a D6. That's all D6. Then you typically have a leadership and a save characteristic. Save meaning, you know, after you've taken damage, what you need to roll above on a D6 plus any modifiers. And a leadership meaning, you know, if your unit has taken so much damage, if you've lost so many guys, it's quite possible you could fail a leadership and you could lose more guys as they run away from the battle in terror. And so it is dice-based, so your unit will be represented by a number of models with a number of attacks. Weapons are different. Some models don't have any shooting weapons, and they're just crazy berserkers that are running across the table with a chainsaw, which is a sword that's a chainsaw, and a chain axe, which is exactly what you think it is. It's an axe that has a chainsaw. And they're running across you, trying to chop you up. While you have a race called Tau, which are primarily all range focused and are very bad at close combat, but will stand 48 inches away from you or 36 inches away from your unit. And they have buckets of dice that they're rolling at you. And again, it's all on player preference and how you want to play your game. That gives people a wide choice of what they can pick. So I will pick my army, all the range of game with my friends. They'll come over, and it's typically about 2.5 hours, 2 hours, depending on the armies and the player. You can bang out a game. And at the end of it, there's a winner, there's a loser, sometimes you tie.
I thought it would have been a lot longer than that.
It can be. Like I said, you can have, because it's point-based games, you can pick a smaller point level, like 500 points, 1,000 points, and the game will typically be shorter. And you can have what they call are apocalypse-style games, which is, you're talking 15,000 points aside.
And those games, that's what they do in the professional circuits?
No, the apocalypse games are usually just, those are actually considered more of the fluffy games. And those games, like, you'll set up like on a Friday night and you'll play for fun the entire weekend. Competitive tournaments are at 2,000 points. And rounds are usually anywhere from 2.5 to 3 hours. Typically, it's a hard dice down. Like, if you hit that 3-hour mark, dice are down. Like, you guys cannot finish, tally up your score, submit your score. We need to move on to the next round. So in the competitive environment, you have three classes of tournaments. You have a rogue trader tournament, or RTT, and that is typically a single day, usually 3, maybe 4 rounds if they're pushing it, anywhere from between 8 to 30 people. Typically, once you get to the 30, it's a little high, but 8 to 16 is your typical RTT, and those are usually like a local store can host one of those.
We've got a store up the block that hosts it twice a month.
Yeah. And then you have a grand tournament, a GT, and these are all ITC terms, the international terms. This applies to North America, but it's a general idea for size of a tournament. That one can be, minimum has to be 32 players, and it has to be a minimum five rounds, which typically spreads over 2 days, because when a round is 2.5 hours, you run 3 rounds in a day, you're already at 7.5 hours plus, 15 minutes in between each round, the movement table plus a lunch break. So a day can run, 8 to 10 hours for just a 3-round tournament. So if you're doing 5 rounds, you'll usually do 3 on the Saturday and 2 on the Sunday. And then you have, a major. And a major is, probably gonna get this wrong, I believe you need 56 players, and it has to, again, be at least a minimum of 5 rounds. Those are typically going to be 6-round tournaments, because at 56 players, you want to get down to one player who's won the best, who's won all their games, rather than, you only run 5 rounds, and at the end of an 80-plus player tournament, you'll have, like, 3 people undefeated. Now, some of the biggest events are, the biggest one is the Las Vegas Open. That happens every February. It is the flagship event for the guys who run the ITC.
Okay.
And that one, I think, last year drew close to 800 players competing in the championships.
Wow.
Not to mention, they had multiple other, like, they had their fluffy tournament, they had their narrative tournament, as well as they had the Age of Sigmar, and they had a lot of other tournaments going on. So I think all told, they probably had, I don't know the numbers, but it's easy, close to 2,000 gamers walking through the Bally's Convention Center in Las Vegas playing various games.
Okay. One question I have is, you're just playing one-on-one, or do you ever play like a group battle or anything like that?
So that apocalypse style games, the ones that are a little more fun, those typically tend to be multiplayer on size. You'll want to bring, I want to bring my entire collection of Imperial Knights, which is like a giant robot style army.
Okay.
And I'll say, look, usually there's one person arranging it, and you'll have about 6-7 people doing it. And one team will usually kind of get stacked. Like, one guy will bring his 12,000 points of orcs. So you'll look for players on the other side to bring roughly about 12,000 points of whatever, usually an allied force on that side. And then you'll play off, one team together against the other. You do also have something called a doubles tournament, which is, again, 2,000 points, but it's meant to be a team of two, so each person will bring a 1,000-point army, and you will fight as one army together against two other people.
Okay.
Those are considered more of, they're not hyper-competitive. They're meant to be a little more fun and like, hey, that's, this game essentially comes down to beer and pretzels. Like, when I get home, I'll crack beers with friends. When you usually want to play that tournament, most tournaments have a bar. And unless you're shooting for the top, most of the people at that tournament are there to play for fun and get 5 games of Warhammer a week and see their friends. I play competitively. I've gone all around Canada, US, and I've even traveled overseas for this. So I have friends who I only ever see at a tournament. I'll chat with them online, but I only ever see them like 3 or 4 times a year at various tournaments around the country. And it's a social atmosphere. Like, so a lot of players are afraid to come to tournaments. They think they're going to lose and they're going to meet the worst person who's just there to win at all costs. And really the opposite couldn't be further from the truth. Most of the people who play at tournaments are there just to have fun. And a lot of them realize there's if you go to a 50 person event, there's probably about 10 people there who have a realistic chance of becoming number one and are shooting for it, which means there's 40 other people who are there to just play some games, maybe go three wins and 2 losses and just have some fun playing Warhammer and drink some beers and laugh. And that's typically the environment that is, and it's a great environment to, it's a really healthy community, and in that sense, online, of course, is something else. Online, like anything else nowadays, can be an absolute crap show. But the actual tournaments themselves are wonderful, and I have friends there that I talk to on a regular basis now, and I've been to their weddings, who I've met through playing competitively.
Cool. No, that's awesome. It's a good community. So if, like me, I've never played this before. I've never started. What does it take to get started? Like, in terms of, time and money, like how much, to get rolling, what are we looking at?
I'd like to add to that real quick.
Yeah.
And on top of that, do you have to paint all of your own parts? You can answer that part at the end if you'd like.
Absolutely. No, that's actually one of the most common questions. It's not a cheap hobby. Your typical squad of Space Marines, which is one of your most ubiquitous factions, 5 to 10 guys can cost you anywhere between, I think a 10-man squad right now will cost you about $70 Canadian.
Okay.
And you may have 60, you may have 60 guys in your army.
All new prices, like not those, used.
Those are all not used. Buying used is wonderful. That's how I got into it.
Mm-hmm.
So first off, obviously, you can walk into any Games Workshop because they have their own stores, and they will run you through a demo. They want to because their sales tactic is to get people into the game, and they'll try to push you on stuff. And depending on the Games Workshop store, you may have a good or bad store. Some are just looking to get their numbers up, and they're just going to push you on anything. Others actually care about what they do, and there's that. If you don't have a local Games Workshop store, a lot of places, unfortunately not like you, Chris, but a lot of places have a local gaming store that will sell Warhammer figures. Now, Warhammer's not the only name in the game. it's by far the biggest. There are many other miniature games out there. There's Malfoe. There's Flames. Malfoe is like more of a skirmish type game where you're running like I think between six and ten models, period, rather than large armies. Mm-hmm. There's Flames of War, which is more historical and tanks. There's Infinity, which again is a skimmish type game with low model counts. Even Games Workshop produces other smaller games. There's Warhammer Underworlds, like I mentioned. That's a deck-based and board-based miniature game. They have Kill Team. Kill Team is a great introduction to Warhammer 40,000. That is, you will pick up a small team, usually typically 5 to 10 models. You can run it on a smaller board, like a 2x2 board, and it's meant to represent individual skirmish-style games. So you're moving individual models rather than the model as a unit. It's still the same rule set, but it's meant to be an introduction. Now, how you can actually get into it? Find a gaming store. Find a gaming store where there's people there. You can talk to people. Going online, like the Warhammer community on Facebook and on the internet is huge. There's tons of resources. So once you've decided to get into the game and you found people you can actually meet up and game with, because that's the big thing. This is a social game. You're not playing on a computer against someone from Hong Kong, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're actually having to socially interact with someone and either meet up at a gaming store. Or because of, you know, me with my son, I wasn't able to get out at that, like, 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock when the game stores were open. I've actually gone out and bought terrain, and I have a table, a gaming table that I can actually set up and tear down at home. So I invite my friends to come over, and we'll game usually later at night, or game on the weekends. So once you have that locale, the location figured out, at that point it's to decide what type of army you want to play. And before it's even the style of army, it's a shooty army or a close combat army or a fast-moving army or a super durable but slow army, really take a look at the models and find the appeal, what the models like. You really like these space marines? Play them. You really like the look of orcs? Play orcs, right? One of the things that if you want to get interested in this and stay interested is you will be spending more time assembling and painting these, and you don't have to paint them yourself. Most tournaments do have a painting standard. It's usually called three color and based, meaning all these miniatures, they sit on a round base or an oval base, and they're 32 millimeters, 25 millimeters, 90 millimeters. So the model itself has to be assembled. It needs to be WYSIWYG, so what you see, what you get. So if you say that your squad of Space Marines has all bolt guns, most of them should have a bolt gun in their hands somewhere on the model. And three-color minimum means, you know, there's three colors in the model. You just haven't hit them with a red primer, include them to a base that I'm going to play. You've gone and you've painted them red, and maybe you've painted the shoulder pads black, and then you painted the guns silver. And that's good enough. There are many ways to actually get models quickly assembled and painted to what we call a tabletop standard. There's lots of YouTube tutorials. Games Workshop even released a whole line of paints called contrast paints that are meant, you hit the paint and the way it flows in the model, it's a little bit of a thinner paint. So it actually will create shading and highlights on the actual model itself. So as opposed to like just a spray painted model, just looks flat and one-dimensional. These will actually have dimension to the model, and then you can just do small details, and boom, you have a painted model that's ready to go. But pick an army that you like the look of, because you will be touching these models, you'll be holding these models, you'll be moving them around the tabletop. And if you don't like painting them, you don't like the look of these models, you have no incentive to play. So that's the first thing. Second thing is then maybe talk to people at your local store or find friends like me who've been playing this game a while and say, find out what kind of game you want to play. Like, I like to play armies that are fairly mobile, but not glass cannons. And when I say a glass cannon, means it hits hard, but the moment you touch it, it falls apart. And there are armies that play like that, where they're highly mobile, they hit really hard, but the moment you put any sort of reasonable effort into killing the units start dying really easily. There's other armies which focus around one or two or three very large, very hard to kill models. Like Imperial Knights, you have one model could be 500-600 points, so a quarter of your army, but it's very hard to kill. It puts out a lot of firepower, but however, you lose that one piece of your army, and now you've lost a quarter of your army. So there's trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
You can have, like I said, a fast-moving army that doesn't do a lot of damage, but controls the board really well. You can have an army that sits in one corner and just throws out a number of shots, but the moment someone comes in and touches you in close combat, your models fall apart. You can play an army that has no shooting whatsoever, but is entirely movement and close combat based. And you can play an army that's a flex, an army that does well at sitting, does well at shooting, does a little bit moving around, and that's typically where I like to play. I like to play an army that's good at everything, but not great at one thing. But that's my style of play, and I found my style of play has matched an aesthetic of the miniatures I like, and that's where I go. Don't even worry about winning your games. It's really just finding and just enjoying rolling dice with friends is the first step.
How many sides are on the dice?
Six. There's six-sided dice.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So yeah, it's a very simple system of you have a number, so a ballista skill, like 3+, meaning you have to roll 3 or higher on the dice to hit with that weapon. And then you have a strength and toughness value. If your toughness is lower than my strength, I wound you on a 3+. If my strength is double your toughness, I wound you on a 2+. And likewise, if your strength is over my, or sorry, if your toughness is over my strength, then you have a toughness of 5, I have a strength of 4, I'm wounding you on a 5. If it's double or more, I'm wounding you on a 6. And if everything's equal, I'm wounding you on 4s. Very, very simple.
So, aside from the financial cost, like, okay, say you buy an army. Like, what kind of time are you putting in for, like, painting and getting it ready?
That's entirely up to the player. So I will, okay. I love painting. I love converting. And by what I mean converting, I mean you can buy a model mm-hmm. and you can assemble it 100% as per the instructions and put it on the table and it'll look great.
Yep.
I like to take time and I will add different arms. I will cut arms apart, reposition them. I'm well known in my local community. For my vehicles, I install LEDs in all my vehicles. So I will cut out spots. I will cut out spots where the lights are. I will install LEDs with a battery pack. So I like to spend time. And typically at a tournament, there's a presentation and painting scoring. So I like to score high in that. And typically, especially in Canadian, not so much in the U.S. The U.S. tournament is more focused on winning the game. But in Canadian, our highest prize is best overall. And what best overall usually comprises of is your battle points, so how many points and how many games you won, your painting score, so how good your army looks, and your sportsmanship. So you have to be a good player who knows how to paint well and is actually a genuinely nice person to play against. I've won best overall multiple times, and that's what I pride myself on. So I pride myself on my armies on looking good, on having a good time while playing, but still playing a tough competitive game. But nice. you can buy a used army. I mean, again, starting off, buy what you like. You can find people selling used painted models for dirt cheap on eBay, on Kijiji and Craigslist, and a lot of there's tons of buy and sell forums or on Facebook and other areas. So you can like my first army, I got into it. I did some reading. I'm like, I wanted to play Blood Angels, so I went out and I saw some guy was selling some Blood Angels, and I picked up a decent Blood Angels army for $200, and that got me my very first tournament army. I spent like another $50 and added 2 more units in, and it was done. And most of it was painted. Yeah, it didn't match. The bases were different colors. The models were different colors. But I was able to take that to a tournament, and I went and I actually had fun. I was able to play with my friends with it. And then I started, I repainted some of the models. I bought new units, and You can, like I said, you can spray prime a model. You can then do what's called a wash, which is you take a, it's a very thin pigment paint, where essentially you just slop it on all over the model, and because it's so thin, it actually flows into the recesses of the models. So then it gives your model a little bit of shading effect, so it gives it depth. And then you can just go and like paint the weapon silver and paint something else black on the model, and it's good. It's good enough to show up at a tournament. And then put some, like, you know, put some glue down and throw some flock, some like brown or green flock on the base, and it looks like your guy's walking through some grass, and you're done. And then, you know, that's the bare minimum. And you can, once you get down to it, I already painted an army to that standard. I could probably paint a whole 2,000 point army in 2 weeks, just to that standard, just to knock it out and get it done. I don't.
So you said it was 10, roughly 10 would be a good starter set? 10 people?
Well, 10 people, that's for kill team. So okay. That's a good way to get into it, which is just...
Is with just 10 base warriors or whatever, right?
10 base warriors. You can find someone who's playing with you, and that way you can buy 10 space marines, and you can play around with them that way. Or then you can... Maybe, I mean, I don't like space marines. I don't like the look of these. Let me try Tyranids, which are like the bugs, and you'll buy like 15 Tyranids. And like, again, you can find these for cheap. And that's a good way of getting into it. Also, just making friends in the community. Mm-hmm. Like, I can go, hey, I want to try playing Eldar. I can call up about 15 different people who have Eldar armies and say, can I borrow an army? Just to try it out. And more than willing, once you know people, you can easily just try out different things. And there's something called proxying. So normally when I'm trying out a new list, a new army, or I've added something new to my army that I don't yet own the model, I'll call a friend over and I'll be like, look, you see this guy here? He's not actually a space marine. He's going to be an Imperial Guard soldier today. And that's going to be it. And I've played entire proxied armies just to get a feel for it. And then gone out, and if I like the units, gone out and bought them. And so there's a whole, like, just especially when you're just playing with your friends, you can, whatever, like, you can even use cardboard stand-ins. Like, I had a friend come over, and we played another game the other day, and he needed two extra fly, planes. I didn't have any spares, so I actually just cut out an oval. I put a piece of paper on the ground, I wrote on it, this is an airplane. I did it for another one. I said, this is also an airplane. And we used that for our game just because he didn't have the models yet, or they weren't built. We were just testing it out. So there's ways around that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And yeah, just buying used models.
Yeah. Well, so for instance, I just searched up on Facebook really quick. I'm in Ottawa. And I searched up Warhammer 40K on Marketplace. And the very first ad that popped up was $25, and it's for 10 well-painted and based fire warriors, one crisis suit, and one stealth suit. So I have no idea what any of those things are, but they look really cool, and $25 for 12 pieces kind of seems like a pretty good start.
And that's not bad. That's not bad. You could actually probably, like, those are for Tau. That's an empire. They're mostly focused on shooting. But that's not a bad start to an army. Like I said, honestly, if you go to gamesworkshop.com, that's the main webpage, and you can get lost, and you can just scroll through armies upon armies and find, like I said, find an aesthetic that you like, because you will be spending time to paint it. Now, if you have more disposable income, there are professional painting services out there. Wow. There are people who you can hire to either, and you can either send them the models, or you can hire them and say, like, I want a professionally painted army, and you can pay them, and some of them will buy and assemble and paint the models and then send you an army. And those, again, those can range. Like, you can say, look, I want a tabletop standard, three colors, and you can probably get a reasonable army for a decent price from someone painted. Or you know, if you want to start off and, like, you've painted a couple yourself, you're like, look, I just need, and I need these guys painted. I don't have the time. I don't want to do it. You can hire someone. Me personally, like, painting is one of those things where Like I get people asking me to paint armies now. I've gotten compliments on my army. Like I said, I've been in Showcase, which is at a tournament where they pick like the top five armies to go out for a player's choice. I've made Showcase more than once. So I've also taken the time, and over the last 6-7 years, you know, I'll paint for an hour or 2 hours a day. You know, typically, like, after I got my son to bed, my wife went to bed, 11 o'clock at night, I would paint from 11 to 12. And really, like, I look back at some of the models I painted 5 years ago, and they're, compared to what I paint now, and they're horrible. But 5 years ago, I can see the progression. Like, it's just like anything else. The more time you spend with it, the better you get. So, honestly, if you buy a model, you throw paint on it, and you just go, doesn't look great. But hey, I tried. Awesome. Because that's what really matters. And the next model you do will be even better. And the one after that will be better and better. And then, like, there are people, I get compliments on my army. There are people out there who blow my paintings out of the water. There are also guys who just compete in painting competitions. And they will spend months and months on one figure. They don't play the game, they just paint. And they will spend all this time painting one figure to enter into a painting competition.
Have you ever thought of getting yourself immortalized on one and having someone paint your face on a character or something?
No, it's pretty funny. I'm the gamer, I like to play the game. So I will paint to hit what's called a painting rubric. So a tournament, you will usually said, you know, to order and to score 30 points on in the painting, you need to, are all your models based? Yes. Are your bases done with more than just a simple flock? Yes. Are your bases thematic? So all my bases have like little pieces of metal intermixed with grass and make it look like there's, you know, there's history to the ground. Are all your models base coated? Are they all the same colors? And then you get extra points for like, are all the eyes done? Is there advanced painting techniques like you've done and you've highlighted all the edges, or you've scribbled little letters on like a tabard that someone's wearing? And so I make sure that I hit those, you know, because I'm competitive and I want to win. I hit those painting rubrics. I enjoy painting, but I enjoy winning. So I make sure that when I'm taking an army to a tournament that I'm trying to win, that it's hit that painting rubric and that all my models match, all my bases match. Like there are certain things you can do. But again, I'm coming from a competitive sense. There are people out there who just never gone to a tournament and they just play with their like two friends or three friends in their basement. And they have the same army that they've had for the last 10 years, and they love it. And that's cool, too. I mean, if that's what you like to do, then do it. I like the competitive side. I like going out and trying new stuff. It can get a little more expensive because you are, especially if you're trying to win, you're always trying to stay at that leading edge. So when a new army comes out, you need to either adjust your current list, which maybe means bringing in new units, or when a new edition, like every now and then, every 2 years or so, they'll release a new edition, which kind of maybe will change the rules around. So we're in 8th edition Warhammer right now. That came up about 2 years ago. Everyone's suspecting that about next May, they're going to roll over to 9th edition. 7th to 8th was a huge jump. They actually drastically changed the rule set. But that's because from about 4th edition to 7th edition, there was just a slow change. Things kind of slowly progressed in the rule set, and it got a little stale. You have what's called power creep, so every single time a new book came out, it was marginally better than the last book. So if your book hadn't come out for the last 2 years and you've had 18 books come out, the army that you use is kind of suffering a little bit because things have advanced. So what they did in 8th edition is they cut all the books. Everything was gone from 7th. They rewrote pretty much the rules from the ground up. They simplified a lot of things, and then they re-released every single army book over the course of about 6 months, and everyone was almost in the same playing field. which was really nice because it allowed you to play. You saw new things at the tabletop. And since then, they've done a great job at releasing a rule modification every 2 months. So in March and September, every year, they release a big fact for 20 ask questions that corrects rules or makes slight errata. And then every December, they release something called Chapter Approved, which usually makes I won't say huge sweeping games, but usually make minor changes to how the game is played and adjust certain things for competitive balance reasons. They'll adjust points of some units. They'll adjust them up or down. If we start seeing that at one point, about a year ago, every Eldar army was using 9 Dark Reapers because they were really points efficient. They did a really, really good job. So what Games Workshop did is that end of that year, they said, okay, Dark Reapers are now 7 points more per model. So your 9 guys or your 10 model unit is now 70 points more, which doesn't seem like a lot, but all of a sudden now if you want to take that unit, you're forced to cut 70 points out of your list, which can mean an extra tank. It can mean an extra unit. It can mean that one character that was, giving some general aura buffs to everything, all of a sudden you can't take him anymore, and the list is poorer for it, but it was better for the game balance overall because that unit itself was too good for its points cost. Or they've done stuff where, oh, this unit's fine at this point, but the gun we gave it, it's a little crazy, or it's not good enough, and we're going to change the gun. So it's nice that they're actually, Games Workshop is putting the effort in there to balance the game. Obviously, because you're talking 20 sub-factions or more, and then, books that probably have over 100 units in each one, there's some things you can't balance, and there will always be optimal units and suboptimal units, and that's, the competitive community is great at finding that out. They really recently re-released a new Space Marine book, mm-hmm. and within 2 weeks, you had a certain faction 14 out of the 16 tournaments that weekend, Space Marines were in the top 1, 2, 3 of every single one. So there was obviously something very good in that faction that competitive players found right away. Like, you can have 50 plus playtesters, and they'll find stuff, but the moment you release it to the general public and you have 5,000, 6,000, 10,000 people playing it, you will quickly find the broken stuff. And they've gone back out and they said, okay, look, yeah, it looks like you guys did find it. Here's the adjustment. And they released a fact specifically for that army that adjusted certain things and brought it back into balance for the game.
Excellent. Now, you had mentioned that you've been to tournaments, yes. both in North America and overseas. So where has this taken you exactly? Like, where have you gone with Warhammer?
So Canada-wise, I've competed all around the province of Ontario. Haven't actually gone out to Ontario. Ontario is probably the strongest scene in Canada. I do travel out to Ottawa probably once or twice a year.
And you never contact me? What the hell?
When I'm out there, man, it's all Warhammer all weekend long. I'm at a tournament probably from 8:30 in the morning. We'll finish up at around 7 o'clock in the evening, and then I'll go out with the tournament buddies. We'll go out for drinks, and that'll usually last until 10 o'clock at night, and then we're right back at the convention hall at 8:30 the next morning, and then I'm driving back home to Toronto that night. Oof. So it's a whirlwind. So I'll go to the Capital City Bloodbath, which is an Ottawa-based tournament. It's probably one of the biggest in Canada, 100-plus players. I do something called the Canhammer Team Tournament, which is a team-style tournament. So you're actually in a team of 5 people. You each bring your own 2,000-point list, and I'll actually get into a team tournament because that's probably my favorite format. And the second one I talk about going overseas. And then you have your regular tournaments, and I'll hit up some regular tournaments, smaller, one day, 3, 8, here locally in Toronto, which there's probably one every other weekend, to Hooded Goblin GT, which is in Georgetown. They're all over the place, and there's the bigger ones down west that I've traveled down to. I've gone to Albio, the Las Vegas Open, that 800 player tournament. I've gone down there, came in 54th out of, like, I think 400 people.
Wow.
Which is a pretty good achievement for me. That when you're considering you're playing of the best of the best, like the players whose name you hear all the time, like everyone's competing down there. So I've gone across the states a couple places, and then actually recently this summer, as I mentioned, the ITC is big in Canada and North America. The ETC, the European Team Championships, is big in Europe. And that is specifically because the ETC itself is an event that happens every year. And that is a team tournament that happens in a different location. This year, it was actually in Serbia. And what a team tournament is every country is given the opportunity to put together a team of 8 players, and you go over and you compete against all the countries, similar to like the Olympics of Warhammer. And what a team tournament is you actually will, you'll have a team of 8 players. No one can bring the same faction on your team. So if I'm taking Space Marines, nobody else can take Space Marines.
Wow.
It promotes diversity.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you'll meet up with another team. Everyone's list. There's nothing hidden. You'll meet up another team, and before you even sit down to play a game against your opponent, there's a whole pregame of like face down pairings where you actually put a player down. The opposing team will put a player down, and then you choose from your remaining 7 players, which you pick 2 players, and you say, "We want your player that you've put down to play one of these 2 players." And then they give you 2, and there's a whole pregame of matching up your favorable matchups to see if you can get the most wins. So you actually might, there's a whole like half hour before any games are actually rolled, any dice are rolled, of matching up your matches, and then you go and you play a 4-hour match. This was probably the most intense Warhammer I've ever played in my life. Every game, normally at a tournament, you go to a tournament of 50 people, your first 1 or 2 rounds, you're likely not to run into one of those 10 guys that are vying for the top spot. Sometimes, randomly, you get paired up, but for the most part, you're going to run into a guy who's trying to go 3-2, or someone who's there just to roll dice. So I'm trying not to sound conceited here, but I do consider myself one of the better players in my local area, and I was good enough to make the 8 players for Team Canada this year. So I consider myself a fairly decent player. So at least your first like 2 to 3 matches are easier because you're playing against people who aren't playing at the same level as you. Once you get into round 4, round 5, and round 6, then you typically start running against those familiar faces. Those are the players that are there who want to win the event rather than just play the game. At the ETC, because it's the top 8 players from every country, every game is like the last game of a 100-player tournament. It's always the best players from that country. They're always playing the hardest, and you're trying to win. And how the team tournament wins is that all your game scores are then... So my score is added up to my 7 teammates' score and the opposing team, and then you match those numbers. And if you've hit a certain threshold, your team wins the round, and you get 2 points. If you're within a certain threshold, you get a tie, which is 1 point, and you get a loss as a 0. So it's your 4 hours of gameplay come down to 2 points, 1 point, or 0 points. And then you go into your next round, and you play 2 rounds a day for 3 days. And it was some of the most intense Warhammer I've ever played, but it was amazing. So I was there representing Team Canada in Serbia at the ETC this year. Great, great bunch of my team was amazing. The team, typically in the past 6 years that Canada's been going, we haven't put together the best team. It was more just people who could go, but not the people who were the best players. Chris Haynes, who is the captain of the team, decided that he really wanted to push last year that him and Ruben Martinez, who is a guy who goes by Scary, because he is a very popular YouTube channel called Scarred Cast, and that's a Warhammer. They do battle reports, so honestly, if you want to check it out, how the game's played, you can check out a Warhammer battle report, and you'll find countless. Scarred Cast, he's great. He's a friend of mine, and I'll shamelessly plug him because I've been on his channel. But he's really good at giving a good breakdown of how a game goes. So Chris and Riven wanted to put together a team that they said, we want a podium, which means we want to hit the 1, 2, or 3 in the next 3 years. So last year was year one. This year is going to be year two. And within either this year or next year, we want to hit podiums. We came 16th this year out of 36 teams, which is pretty good. We went 3 wins. 3 wins as a team, 1 draw, and 2 losses. So not bad. We, you know, I think our best record was 4-2, historically. We did get the most favored opponent vote, which basically means all the teams you played against, they picked you out of all the other teams they played that, hey, we'd like to play in the Canadians the best, which admittedly is a very Canadian thing to do, to be the most favorite person. And that was my experience at ETC. It was an amazing thing. I'm hoping maybe make the team again this year. Because I was on the team last year, doesn't necessarily guarantee me a spot. Mm-hmm. We've actually already started the application process, and there is probably double the amount of people applying for the team this year, which is amazing. Which means we have even more high quality players who are trying to make the team, which means the team is going to be even better this year, and hopefully the year after will even be better than that.
Awesome, that's very cool. All right, well, thank you, Jeff, for giving us a rundown on Warhammer. It's much appreciated. That's definitely
before we go on.
Sorry, Rich.
Real quick, I had one more question actually about Warhammer and whatnot. Is the tables? You mentioned, yourself having a table that you can break down, and through this conversation, I've been kind of following along and Googling, as I'm sure any listener will, Googling image search and YouTube and whatnot, and I've noticed that there's a big difference in the types of tables that you can have. Yeah. There's ones that just have, like little squares and they have nothing on them. There's other ones that have the squares and they have pictures on them. And then there's ones that people seem like they go nuts for, and they put buildings and yep. they build mountains and all this. So I would like to know, there's a 2-point question here. Is one, what is your preferred table to play on, in tournaments and whatnot, as well as what do you personally have and prefer just for fun?
So,
does it make a difference what type of table? I guess that would also be very
important. It makes a huge difference. So, tournament tables, what you really do is you want a consistency. So at the ETC was great. You had a light, a medium, and a heavy table. And every row of 8 tables had 2 light, which were identical in any row, 2 heavy, which were identical in any row, and 4 mediums, which were identical in every row. So it's very consistent. You typically don't find that at a common tournament, but you will find general styles of terrain. Typically what you want is you want several larger, when I say larger, I mean 9 inches by 9 inches, 9 inches by 12 inches, and between 6 and 9 inches tall. A ruin, usually in an L shape, because that provides you can't attack something if you can't see it. So if there's something to hide behind, it's cover. You can hide behind it. You can keep certain units safe.
So strategic.
And then so you want a fair amount of those on the table. Usually you want a typical what we call a line of sight blocker. So you usually want like a 12x12 or something that's rather large that kind of sits in the center of the table, so that you can strategically move units around. Because if you plant a table, which we call Planet Bowling Ball, which is very light on terrain, mm-hmm. it tends to favor armies that can shoot, because you can just kind of, you can sit in one place and you can see your opponent's entire army, mm-hmm. and you can just blow them off the table. Yeah. Whereas you don't want to go super heavy, like a complete ruined city terrain, because then those armies that do like to shoot, all of a sudden they can't see anything.
Screwed.
And a very close combat army can then hop from ruin to ruin and then get into combat. you want actually at a tournament, you want a good balance of these tables. So on a one-on-one tournament, you want to make sure you have some heavy, some lighter, but not too light and not too heavy. And that's okay. That's really on the tournament organizer. And to be honest, with a lot of people get tournament organizers flack from. It's expensive to set up a table. You can a decent tournament table will run you about $200. So I have enough terrain at home that I can run a fully stocked heavy, a light or a heavier, a super heavy tournament style table just for when I'm practicing to kind of set up whatever I like. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people have that. And you go to a gaming store, most people play out of the gaming store, they'll have enough terrain that you can get a reasonably dense table. And so, yeah, terrain will vary, and you want terrain that's not just flat. You want, like, different dimensions. So you want height, you want width. So you want to be able to play around and provide enough cover, but it's a balancing act. And then it changes as the game evolves. You go back 4 years ago, cover wasn't as big an issue because shooting armies weren't as strong. They weren't as prevalent. As the meta in the game changed and shooting armies became stronger, people started demanding more and more cover on tables because it's more strategic, right? Like, yeah, you lose your army because otherwise. You get blown off the table on turn one. It's not fun.
Everybody's just going to play shooters, and then you lose your...
And who goes first.
Yeah, like and it becomes the exact same game every time if everybody has the same type of army, right?
Yep. Yeah.
For sure.
And that's why when I was saying like that one Space Marine army that they won 14 out of the 16 events, that's not good. As much as I love that because that's the faction I play, I don't want to see that. Mm-hmm. I want to see every tournament won by a different faction because that means when I go to a tournament, I'm going to be playing against something that I haven't seen before that might be new to me, and that's exciting. I don't want to go to a tournament and say to see the same four lists over and over again. And that's where eventually that happens because people find the best things and they tend to take the best things out of every list. But the games have been doing a good job of keeping the release schedule going so that where we were competitively a year ago and where we are today, drastically different. The lists you see at the top are different. The style of gameplay is different. So it's nice to see constant evolution and change because it keeps the game fresh.
Cool.
And terrain plays a big part in that. Making sure there's been a big push for what they call giant L's. So you actually have an L-shaped building. Two of those in the middle of the table is your standard tournament terrain because it provides decent cover while not dominating the table. You can hide units behind it, but you're still not... if you can maneuver yourself around it, your opponent can still maneuver yourself around and seize the unit there. And you have to expose yourself to destroy your enemy's unit, but so it becomes a trade-off. Then. And like you said, yeah, it adds a little bit more strategy to the
game. Awesome. Sweet. Yeah,
excellent.
I apologize, Chris. I know I've gone on.
Oh,
you get me on.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I'm glad that you came on, and like I said,
this a lot of passion.
Yeah, well, this was something. Yes. Like I walk past Games Workshop, and occasionally I go in there and check, just look around and stuff, and it's something that's always fascinated me, but I didn't know too much about it. So I appreciate you coming on. And giving us a quick rundown. It's been awesome.
But you're welcome. Anytime I can talk, like I said, this is my hobby. This is my passion.
So now we know how to get Jeff to come and podcast more than once every 7 years.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
I have appeared on several Warhammer-based podcasts.
Awesome. all right, well, we are going to be having further discussions, but I'm going to have that on another episode, just because I want to keep the Warhammer as its own episode. So, to end this episode, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet? And Jeff, where can we find you, sir?
Not too many places, actually. You can find me trolling various Warhammer Facebook groups, as I'm wont to do. But that's about it. I tend to keep a low profile these days. I still have my Twitter, but To be honest, I probably haven't checked it in about 3 years. So you can find me on mostly any Warhammer 40,000 Facebook groups.
And at Warhammer tournaments around the province of Ontario.
And at Warhammer tournaments around Ontario and you know upper northeast United States.
Excellent. Yeah, one thing I noticed about Twitter, and I didn't really understand this. Like usually, like when I do a blog post or stuff, I'll tweet that out, right? Like I don't actually typically go on Twitter to tweet. But one thing I didn't realize until I was at work and it was really awkward because I, you know, didn't want anyone to see, you can show nudity on Twitter.
That's been around for years.
See, I didn't realize that until, I was like, I'll check my Twitter. I'm sitting at work and all of a sudden there's boobs and I'm like, crap.
Well, I mean, that's all who you follow there, Christopher.
Well, yeah. Well, this person is a cosplayer, but apparently she's also a nudist as well.
What is this person's account? Cosplayer nudist? I'm interested.
I'll send you a link there, Gritch, because yeah, like nobody saw it because I mean, obviously at work, you are not allowed to use the Wi-Fi for pornography, and you know I was really taken aback by that because I didn't realize that there could be nudity on Twitter.
But that's funny. That was one of the first things I discovered when I got a Twitter account.
Really? well, Instagram is like the opposite. Like if you show any kind of like nip or anything, like their accounts are suspended. Like it gets crazy. But anywho. Rich, where can we find you on the internet, sir?
Also, not in a whole lot of places. I'm, you know, kind of been keeping a low profile as well lately, and I seem to have lost you. Hello?
Nope, I hear you.
Chris?
I can hear you, Rich. Jeff, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
See, this evening, ladies and gentlemen, we've had technical difficulties with Skype. Also, one of the reasons why we're going to kind of split this into two episodes, just because, you know, Skype, I don't know, sometimes it acts up. As for myself, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at ChrisLock1701. I also do a blog. It's called Random Nerdness, and you can check that out at www.randomnerdness.blogspot.com. All right, well, I'll call this an end to this episode, and as I said, we are going to be having a further discussion. We're going to be talking some Game of Thrones, among other things. So, yeah, be on the lookout on this feed for that. So, on behalf of all of us here at the Pop Culture Pub Podcast, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to us talk about Warhammer. And once again, thank you, Jeff, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been more than my pleasure.
Excellent. And again, thank you, listener, and we will see you in the future.